What is going on, everybody? I hope that you all are having a great night and are ready for a spooky tale of the Dogman. Now, let's get spooky. Growing up, my small town always had stories of dog-like monsters in the woods. I had thought were stories parents used to keep their kids in at night and not to have them getting lost in the woods. As I aged, I had never seen or heard anything strange coming from the surrounding forest at night. Still, at least one person in any friend group had a dogman story to tell. I would humor them and move on to more realistic topics. It wasn't until Carrie Little was missing in the woods and I joined a volunteer group to find her that I started to change my mind about the local tales. Carrie was the definition of perfect. She got top scores in her grades and was the top player on her basketball team. She was very polite and volunteered at the church when she wasn't busy with basketball. Her family was very close with the church as well. Every event, they went all out. Her father spent every spare moment at the church. He might as well have been running the place. When Carrie didn't come home on a Friday night, it was a very big deal in our small sleepy town. The only black spot on her, otherwise spotless record, was she started to hang out with some school outcast, Yuri. I knew his family better than I knew about hers. They lived in the middle of the woods. He walked 5 miles each day to school, his clothes worn and threadbare. They mostly lived off the land and off the government welfare the rest of the town complained about. The family was reclusive, but didn't cause any trouble. When his mother was still alive, she went into the town with Yuri. After she passed, people saw less and less of him. When I had lost my childhood dog in the woods, Yuri's father was the one to find him. I may have been the only person in that town who didn't have an issue with the forest-dwelling family. That's why the sheriff requested I speak with them about Carrie with the deputy present. "I really don't think they have anything to do with this," I said to Deputy Carson, while we drove along the bumpy forest road. "We've searched their place already and found nothing, but she was last seen walking in the woods with Yuri. There just has to be something there. I don't think they did anything either. I just feel like they know something," he said, sounding a bit strained. 2 days had already passed. The entire town was out in the woods looking for Carrie. The school even let the students have the days off to let them do whatever they could to help. Some made up missing flyers to start driving them to neighboring towns, and the older high school kids joined in with the volunteer search teams. Carrie was their beloved classmate. She should be getting ready for prom, not lost somewhere scared and alone. I didn't want to think that the Key family had anything to do with this, but at the same time, I wanted Carrie to be found. Pulling up at the end of the road, we needed to walk the rest of the way. A few minutes into the forest, I was dripping sweat, Deputy Carson not looking any better. "Tell me again why I'm going with you on this?" I asked him, huffing in the humid air. "Because, Perry, if I went alone, Mr. Keeve would shoot me," Carson told me in a tone that implied he was suffering just as much as I was in the heat. By the time that we had reached the small cabin out in the woods, we were both panting and nearly done in from the short hike. Mr. Keeve was out front, chopping wood as if it wasn't a million degrees outside. He didn't even look up at us as we arrived. Deputy Carson stayed back, suddenly interested in a pile of rotting leaves to let me talk alone with the man. Mr. Keeve was a large guy. A full grayed beard and massive shoulders made him look like a person you would not want to mess with. Even I was a little scared of him. I tried pushing that fear back to remember how he had found Marley before he got mauled by some forest animal. "Pretty hot out here to be doing chores, don't you think?" I thought I sounded friendly. Mr. Keeve didn't even look up at me. "I don't know anything about that girl." His voice was low and rough. With one great swing of his axe, he split a very big hunk of wood in half. I think I heard Carson jump at the noise it made. "Yeah, there's just no way the deputy could do this alone." Listen, Mr. Keefe, I might be the only person in town who believes your family had nothing to do with this. You're not at all the type to hurt anyone. If someone goes missing in the woods, you're always the one to track them down, alive or not. I just thought maybe Yuri might remember something Carrie said that night. Maybe anything else that he hadn't told us yet. Maybe it was a little thing that he didn't find that was important, but we just want to know if she's safe, that's all. I was rambling. Still, Mr. Keefe stopped chopping to look at me. His steel-colored eyes gave me a slight chill when they landed on me. I trusted him, but his stare still burned down to my bones. I glanced around, trying to avoid it to see some dog tracks in the dirt around us. I worked as the only vet in town and wasn't aware of the family owning dogs. If they had some, I had never seen them for the shots. Yuri has nothing to say to you. Mr. Keefe was still speaking with me, but I felt like the last answer was directed to Carson behind me. A hint of hope came from my stomach. Maybe Mr. Keefe would speak with me if I was alone. Mr. Keefe didn't trust the local police, and rightfully so. The sheriff treated him poorly, sometimes bringing him in for any petty crimes he could think of instead of putting the effort into finding the real person responsible. With the entire town already looking down on him, it was easy for the sheriff to get away with it. Alright, thank you for your time. Carson gave me a look as I turned and grabbed him by the arm to start to drag him down the trail. I would come back alone later. Mr. Keefe might tell me something he'd be holding back, but only if the deputy didn't make a scene and left with me. Confused, Carson went along, giving me a few backwards glances towards the large, gruff man. When we were out of earshot, he spoke. Why did you give up so fast? He doesn't like you. If you're with me, he won't talk. Carson let out a sign as an agreement. In his mind, we hiked and sweated for nothing. I didn't tell him my plan of coming back later. He might insist that I go right back, and I knew Mr. Keefe would stay silent if he felt I was working for the cops. The radio in Carson's truck was going off when we got back. He forgot all about Mr. Keefe in the woods when he picked up the receiver. A search group found something about a mile away and didn't want to touch it until some of the law enforcement looked over it. I jumped in the truck to go with him, knowing he didn't have time to drop me off anywhere. A drive and a hike later, we found ourselves in the middle of the woods looking at a recent camp. A small clearing with some sleeping bags, an open can of Spam, and a tiny dying fire. Beside one of the sleeping bags was what made the volunteers call us over. Carrie's sneakers. Her and another teammate owned the same brand and size. In practice, they kept mixing them up, so Carrie wrote her name on the inside of them. Everyone hoped that was a sign that she was still alive. I stayed out of the way. I asked one of the volunteers to give me a ride back in the town because Carson was going to be at the site for a while. One agreed after they finished searching for the day. I joined them. Just before the other deputy arrived and the volunteers left with me, I heard something off into the forest. The rest noticed me staring off in the distance, and we all became silent trying to hear. Tense, we all listened when a soft bark came from the trees. "Is that a search dog?" one of them asked. Carson shook his head, knowing no search dogs would be in the area. We called for the dog, and the other two men went into the woods trying to find it. In the end, we didn't hear any more barking, or found any traces of a dog being in the area. One of the volunteers looked a little scared. Growing up here, the tales of the man-eating dog man in the woods, no bet. When the other deputy came, he took statements and we were no longer needed. The news of finding Carrie's sneakers flew through town. It gave people hope on finding her soon. The day dragged on and the forest gave up no clues. A heavy air came over everyone as we knew it would soon be the third day of her missing in the woods, and that was not good at all. Before I drove down to the forest trail that night, I bought a six-pack of beer from the gas station, hoping that would endear me to the odd forest man. It was nearly dark by the time I arrived at the Keeves family cabin. The front light of the cabin was on. Here I thought the place didn't even have any electricity. Before I even finished walking up the path, Mr. Keefe came out with a shotgun in his hand.
"Well, it's just me,"
I said, holding my hands into the air, six-pack heavy. I brought peace offerings. Mr. Keeve looked at the beer, then at me. Slowly, he leaned the gun against the front door frame and summoned me over. I found a seat on the tree stump and he stood. The beer was warm, but better than nothing.
Did the cops send you?
He asked straight out. No, I just was wondering if you really didn't know anything. No one has seen Yuri either, so I don't think he hurt her. If they ran away together, what's the harm saying so? We just want to know that she's all right. Carrie was a perfect student, but that means a lot of pressure. No wonder that she would run off, leaving behind all those expectations and hard work. She could be ashamed that she couldn't handle all of it, and that's why she didn't tell anyone her plan. Yuri was a good kid that would shoulder all the blame if that meant helping her out. But they were dumb kids going about all of this the wrong way.
He might just be trying to avoid everyone blaming him for her missing, Mr. Keefe pointed out.
Yes, that might be true. He is a bit of a sensitive kid. I can't help but feel as if you know where they both are, though. If you didn't want to be the first one out there looking in the woods for her, what the town has to say be damned. The fact that you're just staying home might mean that you're sure she's all right, or at least not in the woods.
He paused mid-sip of his beer. It was a clue I might be onto something. The fact that he was not out in the woods tearing through it trying to find a poor lost girl was clear he knew something the rest of us didn't.
The sheriff was being too stubborn to not see the fact. He stood, thinking about what to say next, and I fought back with a smile. Off in the distance, I thought I heard some noise in the woods. Taking my eyes off him, I squinted into the darkness. For a second, I saw a pair of eyes looking back at me. It didn't scare me, after all. It could just be any kind of forest animal looking at us. I heard him clear his throat and turned my head back to the man.
How many days has it been?
Mr. Keeve asked, his expression hard to read in the dying light.
3,
I answered, pulse quickening with hope. He took a long drink from his beer. It looked as if he was considering something. With a small kick at the dirt, he decided he trusted me enough to tell me.
Tomorrow or the next day, you'll know why Carrie would want to leave. Yuri went with her. I can't say where they are besides safe in the woods. The postal services are slow around here, so that's why it took so long.
That was it. It was everything he would tell me, but it was enough for now. I know that she went on her own free will. She was still missing, but at least alive and safe. Yuri knew these woods and could take care of her until they came back. Or when they came back. The look on Mr. Keeve's face made it seem as if he had already lost a son. I dearly hoped that those two would return after everything died down, no matter what information came to light. I left the rest of the beer and headed back to my car. Now, all I could do was wait. I wasn't going to tell Carson what I had heard for at least 2 days, just in case. If I did, I felt like I was betraying Mr. Keeve's trust in me. Besides, even if I told him or the sheriff, what else would they do? It wasn't a waste of time still searching for her, and Mr. Keeve didn't exactly know their location. But after 2 days, I would repeat what I had heard. In the later afternoon, I found out why a girl like Carrie would want to run off. I met Deputy Carson in the coffee shop looking shell-shocked. I asked him what was going on. After looking at me, he ordered a coffee and led me outside. He leaned against his truck, not even noticing the drink in his hand.
You'll learn about this soon. Hell, everyone is going to. Can you not tell anyone I told you this before the news drops, though? I nodded, and he went on.
Carrie's father, Kelvin, there was a package that came in the mail for the sheriff. It was a hard drive of all the videos of him. Christ, him and the girl from church. She's young. No one expected this. The sheriff is arresting him now. With all this proof, there is no way he'll walk. I don't understand how no one knew. There weren't any signs. My entire body felt cold. I never would have expected this either. Kelvin Little was a saint. At least, we all thought he was. Carrie was a hero if she was the one that mailed the proof out to end what he was doing. Carson didn't use the exact words about what had happened, but he spelled it out enough for me to get the hint.
This would be hard on the entire town. Not only on the family of the girl involved, but Carson saw Kelvin like a father figure. He wasn't the only one. A lot of the town did.
We should talk to Mr. Kev again. I think Carrie told Yuri about this, and he told his father. He didn't say anything because it would just be his word against the most well-liked man in town. If Yuri and Carrie ran off somewhere, he might have some sort of clue as to where they had went, I explained. I knew I couldn't hide what he had told me last night. Carson nodded, looking sickly and pale. He tossed out his coffee and let me get into his truck before driving back to the forest road down to the cabin. I felt a little like I was betraying Mr. Keeve, but the police would eventually go and see him. I stayed with Carson as he asked Mr. Keeve to come down to the station with us. The man silently came along. Once again, standing in those woods, I felt like something was watching over us just out of sight. It made my arms prickle, and I looked around to try to see whatever it might be, seeing nothing. Mr. Keeve stayed at the station for the rest of the day. It was fairly busy with everything just coming to light. Carson would be unavailable, so I got my car and waited to give Mr. Keeve a ride back home when he was finished. The ride back to his place was a bit awkward. He was silent the entire way, and far too big to really fit inside my car. Stone cold, he didn't even move as a small car had issues going over the humps in the forest road. The missing girl was yet to be found. I wasn't sure what was going to happen from now on, if people would keep searching for her, or if they knew that she had left because of her father. When we arrived at the end of the road and to the trail that he needed to take back, I parked the car but kept the high beams on. The air inside the car was tense, to say the least. I opened my mouth to say something when I saw a figure walk onto the trail a few feet from my car. Darting out, I stood beside the car, door open, mouth dry. The girl everyone fretted and looked for was standing on the trail wrapped in a blanket. I thought something terrible had happened to her when I saw her. Red hair a mess, feet bare and dirty. She had a healing bite on her neck from what I had assumed was from some sort of animal. Maybe a dog bite, but I wasn't too sure. When I took a step towards her, she skittered back, clutching at her blanket. She didn't look like she had recognized me at all. "Are you all right?" I asked her, voice hoarse. It sounded stupid to my own ears, but I couldn't think of anything to say. "What on earth happened to her?" A flicker came to her eyes when she looked over towards me. I took another small step forwards, hoping not to scare her away. If she ran, I may not catch up with her in the dark. I froze when I saw two flickering red lights behind her. I knew they were eyes from some sort of animal, but didn't know what animal that lived in the woods with red eyes. "Carrie? Come on." Yuri's soft voice came, but I didn't see him in the dark trees. She turned, and I still am not sure what I believe I saw. In the blink of an eye, I was no longer looking at the beloved missing girl, but a large wolf. Since I work as a vet, I have seen enough dogs to know that this was no breed man created. It had reddish-brown fur and the blanket Carrie had just a moment before on its back. The thing was huge, almost as big as my car. I stood, unable to move. The thing looked over its shoulder at me, red eyes making my blood cold. It was only then that I remembered Mr. Keeve still there. I turned my head over in a stiff, jerky motion and saw him standing outside to the other side of my car. He gave me a small nod, then crouched down. Instead of the man I knew and trusted walking out from the other side of the car, another wolf came trotting out. Gray and huge, I didn't think that this could be real. Their heads looked like wolf-like, but their bodies looked a bit off. As if their arms and legs were too long, it wasn't a natural shape. The gray creature met up with the reddish one, and they both darted off into the dark woods. I collapsed on the spot, unable to stop them, or able to do anything at all. As I sat there, my mind slowly started to work again. I heard something howling off in the trees. Carrie, Yuri, and Mr. Keeve were never seen again. I was the only one who knew the true reason why.
Even if the wolf creatures I saw weren't real, I fully believe Carrie and Yuri are somewhere happy together. It was her choice to leave, and Mr. Keeve took over as being the father that girl deserved.